Greetings, friends. This is John Haspel, and I am the Dhamma teacher at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. The podcast will begin in a moment. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for additional podcasts, Dhamma articles, and a calendar of our weekly classes and monthly and yearly retreats. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you find this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you, and enjoy the talk. I almost don't want to interrupt the quiet and the stillness. In that stillness, in that non-distracted state between thoughts of distraction, is that emptiness of clinging. What the Buddha is describing in the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths describe the effects of clinging, which is dukkha, which is suffering. And so the Buddha repeatedly came back to that subject, that idea of clinging and what we cling to. And so he identified five groups of clinging, or five aspects of clinging, beginning with the body. The first thing that we cling to is the body, or just the physical world. And we create an identity out of that. We usually overemphasize our body. And then we cling to feelings. Something arises and we have a reaction to it, and we cling to that. We want more of something that makes us feel good. We want less of things that take away from our pleasure. We cling to perceptions, which is really an idea that we cling to our views of the world. And some of us become very hardened with those views. So even within the Dhamma, we can expect the Dhamma to fit into these views rather than recognizing that these are held views. That happens often. It happens often in Buddhism, and it happens often in any religion. The cultural influences that have impacted Buddhism have arisen from clinging to views, clinging to perceptions. The next is clinging to mental fabrications. It's part of perception. We become very rigid in our perception. That's a fabrication. And the final clinging that we do is clinging to consciousness. Again, that's our developed way that we see the world is now the truth to us. And so the Buddha described, this is an article from March of this year, and it's remarkable in that in one paragraph the Buddha describes awakening in a very simple and direct way. And so the Buddha says, and when one has seen the five groups of clinging as they really are, seeing those five groups that I talked about as simple impermanent states of mind that arise from an original ignorance of not knowing the truth of reality, and when one has seen the five groups of clinging as they really are, the arising and the passing away, in other words, seeing the impermanence, the deep impermanence in every aspect of the way we see the world, the arising and passing away, understanding the attraction and the distraction, seeing the arising of desire and the continued delusion, and being delivered from the five groups of clinging, being delivered from them, putting them aside. This one is release. I want to read that line again. This one is release from clinging. All defilements are destroyed. What must be done has been done. Perfection is attained. The burden has been put down. The burden of what? The burden of protecting that one. The highest goal attained. This one is liberated by perfect insight. So he describes the entirety of what we're doing. I emphasize that that line, this one, because we can often become confused that we should be negating this one, or that there's nothing left when this one is awakened, when we put aside all clinging, craving, desire, and aversion. And I know I was emphasizing this point tonight. What you have all done, if you've brought this one up here this weekend to awaken. And what this question came up again last night. I think I was talking to Deb about it too. So what is it? Is there? You were telling that story about the monks in Tibet that believe that when you awaken, poof. You actually poof, you explode or implode, and you're gone. The Buddha awakened at the age of 35, and for 45 years he taught as a human being. He didn't poof. He didn't vanish. He became a highly effective human being. He realized his potential. Maxwell Maltz wrote a book years ago that impacted me. And the book was called Self-Actualization. It didn't point towards Buddhism, but the Buddha points towards self-actualization. We're not negating anything of any value. We're enhancing the only aspect of ourselves that can truly be that can truly attain lasting peace and happiness. So that's an important view to put aside, that once we attain awakening, once we truly understand that there'll be nothing left, there'll be everything that we are will be there constantly. We're moving from nothingness towards everything. The true connection, we've had a few discussions about the real meaning of dependent origination. The true connection to all things is putting aside all the clinging, craving, desire, and aversion, and letting ourselves be who we are without having to attach things that are distractions to ourselves. Again, the idea of sitting here in this stillness and deeply embracing, deeply settling in the stillness of this moment is putting aside all clinging, craving, and desire, and recognizing who we are. So in this next moment, recognize our own awakened state, free of clinging, free of any of the notions that this body that we have described to ourselves, that we say is us, it's not. The connection to the physical phenomenal world that we reflect our own selves to is not what we need to be holding on to. However we feel in this present moment is something to let go of, to not make it more, to not overemphasize how we feel. How we're viewing the world in this present moment is let go of, and we see the world anew. Trying to fit whatever our experience is, including as we develop an understanding of the Dhamma, trying to fit that into what we want it to fit into is holding on to views. It's clinging. It's clinging on to those five groups. The Buddha said, when that one lets go of all of that, then that one is awakened. He's talking about us. That's the entire practice of the Four Noble Truths. So I know I say it a lot, the Four Noble Truths are the truth of stress. The Buddha was only concerned with us recognizing why we're so distracted through our own senses. The Buddha identified a sixth sense base, and the sixth sense base are our five physical senses, and he identified that as in a very simple way, that each sense has its own consciousness. There's eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, feeling consciousness. I'm missing one.
Taste
consciousness. And then consciousness itself, which perceives those things. If you understand that it's through the need for sensory fulfillment, constant sensory fulfillment, that we establish and reestablish and defend this thing we call ourselves. Anything that feeds those senses that we attach to, I love that smell, or even if it's just that I need a certain smell, is impacting nose consciousness. If we take delight in this beautiful view, but attach ourselves to it, there's one thing to see what's around us. Another thing to insist that it's us, to create an attachment to it. Ear consciousness. One of the reasons why we like a quiet space to meditate is so that we're not distracted by our ear consciousness. It's not something that, that's a real clear example of how our senses, it could be a beautiful sound, it could be a beautiful concert. We don't want that in our meditation because we're trying to bring our minds to quietness. Anything that impacts that, just to be aware of it. So, and the point of that is to not react to what's coming through our senses, to just be fully present in this moment, see what's here. That's true mindfulness. So, any questions about that one simple paragraph in which the Buddha describes awakening? No? I think that's a good point to meditate then. We have the idea of what that is to letting go of all clinging. To be empty of clinging. It's a nice visual that we're no longer going to cling. And in this meditation that we're going to do, Shamatha Vipassana, that conscious act of mindfulness, coming back to the breath, is interrupting our clinging. As we're letting go of thoughts, we're letting go of clinging. We're practicing being empty of clinging. So with that idea, find your relaxed meditative posture, holding your back straight but not stiff, ears aligned with your shoulders, nose aligned with your navel. Holding yourself very gently and very lovingly. Allow yourselves to settle into your bodies. Settle onto your seats. Settle into this environment. And settle into your mind. Take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like, to be mindful of your breath. And don't interpret your breath in any way. Don't manipulate your breath. Let your mind settle on that pure sensation of breathing. Notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings. Thoughts should be flowing. The point of meditation is to not be distracted by our thoughts. When you notice that you're caught up in your thoughts, simply acknowledge that and return your awareness to the sensation of breathing, putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 30 minutes. a thought with a thought, remaining mindful of our breathing. If a persistent thought or feeling arises, stay with it for a moment or two. Recognize it as impermanent and return your awareness to the sensation of breathing. We'll meditate for 10 more minutes. Take a moment to notice the quality of your mind. Be at peace with your mind, with your mind. I don't know about you, but I think I formed an attachment to meditating right here. I kept this morning's talk purposely brief. I hope you experienced it that way too. Last night was a very effective beginning for our retreat. We covered an awful lot of ground. And I don't want the retreat to become too intellectual, too much in our heads, too much that we're considering the concepts or the words that I talk about or that come up, but rather an experience of emptying yourselves of clinging. That's kind of the point. So using that right speech that we talked about, be mindful of what's coming out of your mouth, the words you're using to in your conversation with each other and what you're telling yourself. And then notice the aspects of clinging that are coming, arising through your speech. As the weekend progresses, probably more so on Saturday and certainly on Sunday, you're going to be thinking about your non-retreat lives, your lives back home. And that's a good way to recognize clinging, too. So use our time here to fully understand clinging, because that's really what the Buddha was talking about. And an aspect of clinging is aversion. So notice that. Notice when things are coming up, maybe other people. Maybe to the facility, maybe to the talks I'm giving, maybe to the color of the bathroom walls. It could be anything, but notice it. And simply notice it just to recognize that, yeah, you're clinging, and to empty yourself of that clinging. And slowly over the next 2.5 days, you may be so empty when you leave here on Sunday that you'll know who you truly are. You'll be the one that the Buddha talks about. The teachings are there so that we can actually achieve that. It's not an unachievable goal. In fact, it's something that's very simple. That does not mean that it's easily achieved. And it's not about acquiring anything. It's about recognizing that's what we're clinging to and emptying ourselves of it. Are there any questions or comments? Matt?
Just wanted to speak a little about some things that you had touched on and Maura had touched on last night, and something that Deb had said. I guess she's not here, but so I'll wait. Talk about
yes.
It another time.
Oh, wait for it.
I think people may have time to get like a little blanket or a coat. Yep.
Yeah, let's give them a chance to come back.
I was thinking about you with your short sleeve shirt.
I think we'll have our afternoon session
on the sunny side.
On the lawn right out here.
This was maybe a wonderful idea. We got to focus on the earth's breath.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You really get a feel for it. It's just such an incredible view.
Can we be at peace with cool breezes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Every time I kept like the mind of, can we go on the other side?
Mm-hmm. Clinger.
Well, we'll have a rather short session this morning. I want to give you all time to just be quiet, be by yourself. You know, we don't need even the constant stimulation of activity.
I found it very challenging when the cell phone started to vibrate.
It's
that just threw the whole thing off for me, because we're supposed to be free of it right now.
And that's a good aspect of clinging too, you know, that the aversion aspect. It's even more pronounced when you're in this type of setting.
Well, you know. A train could ride by and that would be fine.
Yeah.
But a cell phone vibrating is a personal assault.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, the cold was I'm going to be really cold now. I'm going to be really cold. And then I remembered a saying that I heard many, many decades ago. And that was, the cold is not the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. So I just, you know, it's cold. I don't have to avert from that. It's just cold.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of what we're talking about. Not clinging that it be warmer than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Experience of what it is.
So that's what I was referring to. So who is the enemy? What is the enemy?
At this point, there isn't. They're just cold.
No, the sense of self, I could see that, you know, the trouble arises when I want to go on the other side. And then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, like, just being present with that, like, as soon as I recognize that and let it go, everything is fine. Mm-hmm. Moment after moment.
Yeah, and if it's just too cold, you get up and put a coat on.
Yeah, you can get clinging to being the tough guy.
Yeah.
You
know?
True.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Charlie said that once.
I'm not going to let that cold bother me.
Charlie said what about sitting on the floor, and you said in something about, it was such a great quote, about torture. Isn't subjecting oneself to needless discomfort is known current
stress postures.
Yeah. That's true.
Vernacular torture.
we can make our practice exactly the opposite of what it should be by making it too severe. You know? By insisting that you sit motionless for hours and hours, and I mean, there's people, I don't know that that's terribly effective.
The aching legs version of Buddhism.
That it just increases the sensory input that increases clinging. So, you were going to say.
So, I wanted to just speak a little bit to something that John had touched on and Moore had touched on last night, and Deb, something that you had said last night about coming into our bodies and being in our body and tying this directly to a direct experience of impermanence. And we can do this when we notice things come up, like last night, things were coming up for people and in our talk, and Debbie had said something about fear or being afraid or something like that, experiencing something like that. And one of the things that we can do as a way to come into our body and experience directly impermanence is to notice where in the body these feelings are arising. So feelings themselves, thoughts, feelings, sensations, all of these things are impermanent. They arise and pass away all day long. When you think You think a million thoughts during the day. You don't remember every single thing that you thought. It's because the nature of thoughts is impermanent. They arise and pass away on their own all the time. You feel a million different things during the day. You don't remember every single thing that you felt. It's because the nature of those things are impermanent. They're arising and passing away all the time. So when things like that come up, fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, anger, any of those things, we want to take a second to notice where it is. Where is it? Is it here? 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 Yeah. So locate it. Find out, find where that sensation is arising in the body for you. And just like John says, just let it be there. Notice it for a moment. Let it be there. What we usually do is the mind labels it. Oh, that's anxiety. That's fear. That's sadness. That's anger. And as soon as we label it, now we attach it to stories, past experiences, scenarios, all of these different things that take us out of right now, which is where that sensation is arising. Present moment mindfulness of this, of the sensation is now. That's what's happening now. As soon as we label it and turn it into a story, we're over here in the future thinking about how we can manage it or deal with it, or we're in the past thinking about how we wish we could change it or get away from it. Both of those directions are taking us away from what's happening now. So the sensation as it is arising is none of those things. It's not fear, it's not anger, it's not sadness, it's not worry, it's not anxiety, it's just a sensation that's arising in the body. And if you can locate it, okay, there's a sensation here. All right. Connect to the breath, breathe into that sensation, watch it change. Because we're directly experiencing the impermanence of it. It arises and passes away on its own. If we grab onto it and label it and turn it into something, then we're going to react to that. And that's going to ramp us up into a scenario, a story, a full-blown panic attack, maybe. So those situations are great places for us to practice and great places for us to directly experience impermanence happening. And it's a great place for us to come into our body and see how present moment is right here, right happening now in our body. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because it's extremely effective in calming that reactive mind down when we get worked up about something. If we can drop the story that we're generating and stay with the feeling that's actually happening now, it arises and passes away on its own. So play with that. Operative word being play.
Four.
Can I add, beautifully said, Matt. We talked about this in, I think, yoga practice this morning, or meditation. It was in yoga, but all of our, all day long, if we're aware and mindful, you talked about the truth of impermanence and anicca, and that we can see it, we know it, we don't know it, we know it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the practice is in anatta, no self, which we talk about a lot. The more we recognize the impersonal nature of sensations as they arise, and how the reactive mind arises, it becomes, there's no self. You know, who's walking, who's breathing, who's thinking. these things are arising under conditions, and we need not be distracted by them. And then dukkha. So we see the three truths of reality. We see impermanence on a moment-to-moment basis. We can see anatta, no self. And we can see dukkha. We see the truth of suffering, dissatisfaction. We don't like something that's happening, or we want more of something that's happening. And we see how that creates, and we can let it go. And yeah. We can experience the third noble truth, right?
Yeah, and this is in week 7 of the book. So you can go into the book and look at that chapter, and there's some exercises too at the end that you can practice too. But this, it's really important to come into the body, come into where awakening happens. This is this thing that we think we are, that we're walking around in, that's where awakening's happening, not somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
You know? It's in the environment of anicca that awakening occurs. This is the environment of anicca. This is what experiences that unfolding of sickness, aging, and death. This is where awakening occurs. It's not to be, and the reason why we're emphasizing that, Maura, Matt, and myself, is that we can get into this practice and deny this, and because of a misunderstanding of impermanence, because of a misunderstanding of the sixth sense base, what we're describing, what the physical body is impacted by consciousness, is the sixth sense base. Pay attention to it. That's where your clinging is arising from. You know, that's what this is about. Deb, you had your hand up.
Oh, I might have missed part of the discussion when I went to get more clothes.
No, we waited for you.
But I guess I've always seen these kind of meditators that are sitting on a block of ice naked and perfectly thrilling.
We're going to do that later.
And I just went to a really ugly place as soon as my physical body got cold. I wanted to snatch your blanket. So I tried to get an imaginary blanket. So you were giving me an imaginary blanket. I found out they're not warm. But so how do you, you know, it's like I'm a little confused about you're in your body. But then, you know, I'm thinking, it's not really very cold. You know, I'm not going to go into hypothermia here. It's probably 60 degrees. So my mind is actually kind of saving me from starting to shiver. So where should you be?
But even when if you had shivered, that would have been fine, too.
But, I mean, I started trying to concentrate on my breath again. And for a few seconds, that would almost work.
But if it's too cold, get a blanket.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I think we did talk a little bit about this when you were outside of the room. Meditation, the entirety of the Dhamma practice is not something that we should just grin and bear it. You know, it's not contentment and acceptance is not stoicism. You know, it's not that. So if you're cold, get up and put a coat on. I mean, really, the aversion to the action can be a form of clinging too. And it's all part of just recognizing what we're doing. When I teach new students, the first thing I teach new students is that it's okay to move in meditation when you're in your posture, because most people, whether they're taught it or they just assume it, that once you sit, you should sit and hold no matter what. It's a good idea to not move around a lot, because the more the body's still, the more the mind can still. But if you're achy and it helps to move your leg, you move your leg. You know? It's very practical stuff. We can get caught up in the concept of what it looks like, you know, and not want to move from that. In our minds, we can get caught up of how we're supposed to be reacting to the world. And that's its own kind of aversion, too. We hold ourselves physically very loosely. We hold our minds very loosely. Let go of the grip that we have on the way things should be, especially Dhamma practice, and see what's there. This, we can develop our own kind of clinging of how practice should look like, too. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, how we should look like as Buddhists moving through the world when you know, when we're normal, you know, naturally in a very stressful environment, and the normal reaction is to not, you know, not like that, or react in a maybe a less, what, you know,
That's such a good point.
The first noble truth
says we're going to experience stress. We're not here to avoid it. That's its own kind of aversion. Mm-hmm. In life, we're going to have stress. In all of its aspects, you know, and that's where that word dukkha really comes in handy, because it describes all of that. So sitting on a beautiful deck when it's a little bit too cold to meditate, get a coat. Or not, you know, or sit there and recognize that you're feeling cold. And it doesn't have to be different than that. Joy.
Thank you all for what you have shared. And I think that Deb raised a point that's been very important to me about the nudist Buddhist sitting on a block of ice, looking profoundly content. And this is going to be my language, and it's judgmental language. But there's looking at people performing aesthetic practices like that has created aversion in me to practice. There's, in my judgment, I see that as a prideful display, and it's unattainable for me. I have a hat on. It's probably almost 70. I can't be a nudist Buddhist on a block of ice. And if that's the agenda for next year, I'm not coming. So if that is what it has to be, it's unattainable for me, and that's so discouraging. And what I have heard consistently from John and Maura and Matt and all the supporting members of our Sangha is that it just is. And Matt, you just shared something that is extraordinarily helpful. One of the challenges that I have ongoing in my life, and just recently it's been greatly exacerbated. I had a big health threat come out from nowhere. My whole life I've struggled with anxiety, and recently it's really had a flare. And a part of what happens is, just as Matt languaged so skillfully, I have the anxious feeling, and I could draw it with a crayon, but there's a whole story that goes along with that. Now you're upset. Now you can't cope. Now you have a stomach ache. Now you can't eat. Now work will be too hard.
And you start reacting to the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just here, nervous, naked on my block of ice. I'm not there, but it is. It's that whole story. And gosh, what a helpful direction to have the felt sensation. I'm not comfortable, whatever that is. I'm too cold. I'm nervous. My back hurts. And then either, well, just breathe. So this is it. Not, it's habit energy in my case to launch into the story. And this practice is assisting me with inserting a pause. Now, maybe it is all a big fat mess. I don't know yet. We'll find out. Or maybe I can just go get my little hat.
Can I add one tiny piece onto that? Because I was taught to say, like, coldness, or even deeper, you know, into the felt sensation of it. So can I keep going into... not, okay, there's tingling here. Sometimes, you know, labeling it tingling, tightness, coldness, etc. But still going into the felt sensation and trying to depersonalize it from I'm cold, I'm sad. Like, just like that sensation, because the more I can take it out of me experiencing it, it becomes less clingy.
And less of the story.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm tingling. I can't walk. I'm so doomed.
Yeah.
It's just tingling.
Yeah. Tiredness is here. And then I can be with it. Like when it's, you know, me that's tired, I'm sometimes will abandon that. But I can recognize tiredness because there's, it's deep. It's as John always says, dispassionate, but not dispassionate in this cold way, in this embracing
way. In a mindful way. The practice that we do, there's some key terms. Samadhi is really what we're talking about here. When we've developed a certain level of concentration, our minds no longer react, and we just see what's there. You know, so we don't take things to extremes. And then the Buddha taught he taught a middle way, and that's applicable in a lot of different aspects. But in life unfolding and having experiences, you talked about asceticism, sitting naked on a block of ice. You know, the Buddha found that, the words that he used were, that's foolish. You know, because he tried that. I mean, I don't know that he actually did that. But he walked around for years naked, not eating anything, you know, living in the cold. In northern India, you know, he was at the foothills of the Himalayas. It was freezing up there. And they believed, they had the spiritual seekers at that time believed that the more torture you could put yourself through, the closer you're going to get to awakening.
It's still ongoing.
And it's still ongoing, oh yeah. And the Buddha, and even though a human being realized it's foolish, there's no value in that. You're creating more sensory input. You're establishing even more this sense of self that suffers. Let it go. And he said, and the middle way is, and avoid the other extreme of complete sensory indulgence, because that'll lead you to the same place. It'll create more of an identity of self. And he found that in his own life. He had everything that any human being could ever want as far as sensory fulfillment, and he walked away from it. He knew that I cannot wake up on a palace grounds. I can't do it. If I'm going to continually have that sensory fulfillment, I'm going to live a life of suffering. And isn't that interesting? That he would be well protected against the normal pain, but he recognized that prison of sensory fulfillment, that constant pleasure, is its own kind of suffering. It's the same kind of suffering as the physical pain that we can feel at times, as being too cold. Find the middle way. If you're too cold, get up and put a coat on. Come back to your sitting. If you're too upset, come back to your breath. Let your mind settle. And then deal with your life as it unfolds. There's going to be sickness, aging, and death. Don't react to it. Maintain that mind of equanimity. In this meditation practice that we've just done and we're going to continue to do, this simple practice of recognizing that you're caught up in your thoughts, coming back to the sensation of breathing, bringing your mind into the present moment, is finding that middle way. It's developing that constant mind of equanimity that doesn't react, but it's still here. The Buddha's death, it's told two ways. One is that he was poisoned to death by rotten pork, and another is that somebody just gave him some bad food. At the end of the Buddha's death, he suffered physically, but he wasn't attached to it being any other way. He didn't become irate. In fact, he made sure. The reason why he ate the piece of pork, he knew it was bad when he looked at it. But he didn't want to insult the man that made his last meal. So he ate it. You know, he didn't react to it. He also knew it was time to go. He had mentioned to Ananda and the other monks that, well, pretty soon I'll be gone. He knew it. It was part of sickness, aging, and death. It was time to go. You know? I think it's time for us to go. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com.
This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.